on Canucks Central. It's Dan Riccio, Satyar Shah here in the Kintec studio. This hour of Canucks Central is brought to you by BC Liquor. Until May 31st, save $3 on Vintage Ink Whiskey Barrel Aged Red and $5 off Empress 1908 Gin. Visit your nearest BC Liquor location today and enjoy responsibly. Continuing to discuss the Stanley Cup playoffs and what's happening as the Canucks continue to negotiate with their head coach. Let's bring in our Monday Hockey Insider. It is Frank Saravalli of Daily Faceoff, and he has a presentation of Angry Otter Liquor. Thanks for this, Frank. How are you?
Pretty good. How are you guys doing?
We're doing well. Still waiting for the Canucks and Rick Tocchet to get something done. It's gone on longer than Jim Rutherford opined it would last week when he said, we'll probably have an answer by the end of the week. And here we are a week later, still no answer on Rick Tocchet. What are you hearing?
Yeah, so look, I think the biggest thing that I come back to is let's unpack this from the beginning. Rick, the Vancouver Canucks have been very upfront in saying we want Rick Tocchet back. Quinn Hughes has been very vocal in how appreciative he is of Rick Tocchet and the coaching staff. So my biggest question is, if Jim Rutherford wanted a deal done by the end of last week, why isn't it done? The power to get that done resides, not solely, but almost single-handedly in his hands. And it's up to him to get it done. And the fact that it isn't, I'm wondering if maybe that means he has his answer.
Yeah, and I think it's going to, I mean, I think one way or another, though, Frank, we're going to find out an answer this week. Like, it's coming to a head one way or another this week.
And maybe that's just by nothing happening at all.
Yeah. No, I mean, I suppose that can happen. And, I mean, let's say he doesn't come to Vancouver. Does he go straight to Philly, or does he wait to see what happens here? Because I wonder if Vegas loses in the first round, do they start thinking about making a move on their coach? You wonder about the LA Kings, with how that series has gone. We can talk about that a bit later here in the hit. But, you know, like if he waits here, like, he might have a couple opportunities.
Oh, I think he's got, if he were to leave the Vancouver Canucks today, I think he'd have no fewer than 5 job offers to coach without even having an interview. And that's not me overplaying the hand. That's my read of the marketplace as a whole. I think there's so few top dog candidates this time around in this cycle that there's plenty of other coaches that have way more question marks that are still going to get jobs this time through. And to your point, we still don't even have a full view of the chessboard. Like, there's still what happens with the New York Islanders, and not saying that that's a target potentially for Rick Tocchet, but also the other team that you didn't mention is the Tampa Bay Lightning. If they lose in round one, does this become a similar situation to Mike Sullivan and the Penguins, where you essentially just say, hey, it's been a fantastic run. We've won back-to-back Stanley Cups. And he's by far the longest tenured coach in the league now since 2013. Is this the moment in time that we just go our separate ways and say, let's try something new for both of us?
Yeah, with 7 openings, and again, what we'll see happen come the playoffs here, and if anything happens after the first round, there could be more. And I know Sullivan came out onto the market, and maybe he is, he's definitely the top guy if the Rangers or Bruins or one of those teams would want him. But Tocchet's probably not too far behind. And you know what? Now that the Penguins' job is open, we know how much Sidney Crosby likes Rick Tocchet. I'm not sure it's a fit for where they are in their build, but you know, Tocchet definitely has ties to the Penguins organization as well.
Yeah, as both a player and a coach, and the relationship that he has with Sid and has family in Pittsburgh. Like, there's a lot of different ties that would bond him to the Steel City. That said, I think you're right, though. It would have to take a pretty extraordinary circumstance with where that team has been heading to say, hey, I'd bypass some of the gravitational pull that exists for teams that are much closer to competing in the here and now. Like, I think the tough part about the Penguins' job is that they haven't even really hit bottom yet in terms of their build. They haven't started tearing it down.
Yeah, and I know they've slowly started to build up some like draft pick assets and some of those kinds of things, but still a long way to go for the Penguins. The other part of this, it definitely to me comes down to money. And I look at teams like the Bruins, the Rangers, and the Flyers, and if there's a coach that they want, they're not going to spare any penny to get that coach. And I wonder, is that sort of a hammer that Rick Tocchet has in negotiations with the Canucks, knowing that, yeah, it might be the best offer the Canucks have ever given to a head coach, but there's probably more money out there for me if I'm able to explore the other market.
Yeah, I think that's really well put. Just because it's a record for the Canucks doesn't mean that it's up to snuff for the rest of the marketplace as a whole, which, by the way, I think is going to change in a significant way because Mike Sullivan's going to have the opportunity now to raise the bar on coaching salaries. He was already the second highest paid coach. There's a reason why the Penguins didn't really fret in making this decision and parting ways because they believe that he's going to have a job within the week, I was told. And so within the week, and theoretically for a higher number, the Penguins are off the hook.
Yeah.
And it's not a financial commitment that they need to worry about anymore because of the offset. The other interesting thing about the Mike Sullivan situation is everyone is so focused on the Rangers, which I think is a great fit and probably the very clear odds-on favorite to land Mike Sullivan. And then, of course, you've got the Bruins and you've got that whole, Northeast geographical reason. But I have to tell you, in talking to people close to Mike Sullivan today, they mentioned if things don't work with Rick Tocchet and the Canucks, don't sleep on the idea of a Mike Sullivan and Jim Rutherford reunion. Now, I think that's a long shot, but I do think that in the end, the belief is that the best general manager Mike Sullivan has worked for in his career was Jim Rutherford. And he did not obviously get along with Ron Hextall, and they had differences of opinion in terms of what this build was going to look like this summer with Kyle Dubas. I don't think any hard feelings, but that tie of winning Stanley Cups there, it's pretty significant. And I don't think that Mike Sullivan is necessarily yearning to move cross continent again, but I was told do not sleep on that as a possibility if the Canucks have an opening that Jim Rutherford would make a play.
That's very interesting. Also, maybe not unsurprising because of Jim Rutherford's desire to bring him in, because we know how much, that relationship, as you mentioned, is meaningful for both those parties. My biggest question about that is, will the Canucks as an organization be willing to make Mike Sullivan the highest coach ever on a per year basis? And I'm not quite sure they would be. Now, maybe the out is the first couple of years. Go on.
I just wish you were on the other end of my conversation today, because that's the exact point I made was, if they're not willing to pay Rick Tocchet, why would they suddenly be willing to open up the checkbook for Mike Sullivan?
100%. But now, I guess if you wanted to rationalize it, because the next 2 years the Pens are paying him, it's a smaller number the next 2 years because it gets offset a little bit. But then final, whatever many years you sign him for are going to be at the full freight. But does that make it a little bit easier maybe for somebody to justify it? But outside of that, I just have a hard time seeing them, doubling what they're looking to pay Tocchet. I think if Tocchet is going to be the highest paid coach they've had and their number is $3.5 million, are you going to pay twice as that number for Sullivan? I'm just not convinced.
I am not privy to any of the discussions, obviously, but my assumption would be that any deal with the Canucks and Rick Tocchet would require a number that starts with a 4.
Yeah, and that's... Go ahead, Zach.
Oh, yeah. I mean, on the coaching thing, I think that's fair. That's a number we've heard too, around 4. Did the Canucks get to that number? And we'll ultimately see where it goes. But I did have one more thing on the coaching front before we move on to the playoffs. Is Joel Quenneville going to end up back in the NHL here?
I think so. Just go back to what I was saying about the potential number of openings. We're talking about more than one third of the league's jobs potentially open, depending on how this Canucks, Islanders, and first round situations play out. We've got 7 today. If we're at 11 and you're saying, okay, Mike Sullivan, slam dunk. Rick Tocchet, slam dunk. Does David Carl move from Denver, which seems like a bit of a long shot at this moment in time? Okay, who's the next rung of candidates? And yes, there's the PR part of the Joel Quenneville hire that someone is going to need to wrap their hands around. And obviously, the Oilers, they did that with Stan Bowman as general manager. So there's obviously precedent there. Some people feel like the Quenneville situation is different because he kind of was directly in charge of Brad Aldrich as video coach and felt like that he should have had better control of the situation. Look, there's a lot to unpack there, but I would believe that if there are 7, 9, 11 openings, that you're going to have a hard time finding 3 better coaches than Joel Quenneville, who's obviously hungry to get back in and work again.
Frank Saravalli, our guest. So the Oilers pulled a rabbit out of the hat last night. Evan Bouchard we got the full Evan Bouchard experience last night, a roller coaster defensively and then saves the game offensively at the death there for the Oilers. It's been a wild series. So weird how LA has dominated the first 2 periods in games and then the Oilers have found a way to come back so often in the third. Do you think that Edmonton finds their game more as this series goes on, or does LA figure out how to close games out?
I think the more likely possibility is that the Oilers find a way to clean up their game.
Yeah.
I mean, they really have no business being in this series at all.
Mm-hmm.
They've gotten their doors blown off for 85% of this series to this point in time. Yet, I mean, even think about how, like, let's flip this around. Let's say we live in a totally alternate universe. Like, think about it from the inverse, which is maybe the Oilers should have even won Game 1 by the virtue of how they came back, and the Kings got lucky. You could even see a world in which the Oilers are up 3-1 by sheer happenstance, by accident, which, I mean, it goes to show you just how ridiculous this series has been from top to bottom. They've had no business being in these games late.
Mm-hmm.
They've trailed by multiple goals. They've relied on some fluke situations, including a coach's challenge that went awry. And yet, and by the way, they're on their second goalie, and there's not really a ton of confidence brimming in net. And yet here they are, all square, heading back to L.A., and a chance to basically just string together 2 quality games or some semblance of that in the next 3, and you're moving on to the second round. And maybe the oddity of just these games and how the series has played out with this opponent kind of gets wiped away, and you find yourself in a better spot next time around against a different opponent.
If you're the Kings and you bottle this series, and I think they've kind of blown their chance. You had a chance to go up 3-1 and really take a stranglehold here, and you didn't do that.
They could have swept.
They could have, honestly. And I mean, we the challenge, right? The Hiller decision and all that, that's happened too. But I mean, if they don't win this series, does that mean Hiller is gone and Rob Blake are both gone? Like, is that how high the stakes are here?
I think the general manager question is specifically up to Rob Blake. I think there's been that's a big storyline here that hasn't been talked about that much. Rob Blake is in the last year of his deal as general manager.
Mm-hmm.
They've put a contract extension on the table and he hasn't signed it. And I don't think it's been because of finances. I think there's been a legitimate question inside, my guess is his own head. Am I doing the right thing? Have I made the right moves? And how much longer do I want to do this? As a guy who was a $100 million player, he's had an amazing career, and now 8 years at the helm, and if they don't win, then 0 playoff round wins in 8 years, which is tough. And the coaching part of it, obviously, is tied to what happens next with general manager, but the decisions made in this series from the challenge to continuing to play 4 defensemen when it looks like they're running out of steam quite clearly in third periods and not being able to close it out, those might be some really difficult decisions for Jim Hiller to come back from.
Yeah, it's been tough. I mean, that challenge on Friday, I'm still like... I'm watching. I'm like, what is happening? Why are we challenging this?
I mean, I try to rationalize it by saying maybe he kicked the pad before it came around. Like, it made no sense. Like, it made zero sense why he challenged it.
Here's the thing. Even if I felt 100% confident that I was getting the challenge correct, I'm still not sure if I'm willing to do it. Like, even at 100%, because even when you feel really confident, there's always the chance that in Toronto they see it in a different way, or there's something about it that you didn't get. And that said, with the momentum and everything that goes with that power play, like, I'm hoping if you're the coach that you put yourself in a situation where you say, look, we gave up the tying goal. Let's not give up the game-winning goal here on the power play, because it's that significant of a shift.
Sometimes, Frank, the playoffs can feel like Groundhog Day. You know, the Leafs choked away another series. That's been a recurring annual story, though it hasn't happened yet this year. The Hurricanes don't have enough offensive firepower when they get into the later rounds of the Stanley Cup playoffs. The Oilers' goaltending is always a discussion point at some point during the playoffs. And unfortunately for Connor Hellebuyck, he's been an annual storyline because he's the best goalie in the league. A Vezina Trophy winner is going to be again this year, and yet he gets to the playoffs, and it's like he's a different guy. Have you figured out what's going on with Connor Hellebuyck and why he can't seem to translate his regular season play into the postseason?
Man, if I figured it out, I'd be a seriously wealthy guy.
Yeah.
Look, I actually kind of feel bad for him because It's obvious that there's no physical issue here. Like, it's not like he gets to the playoffs and it's too fast for him or his brain doesn't compute. Like, it's purely a mental thing where there's some kind of block there that he's not able to get through. I mean, how else do you explain? Like, I think that's the tough part about goaltending from year to year. But when you see that in the playoffs, I don't really have an explanation for how a guy can lap the field in every seeming statistical category and then get to the playoffs and be the 16th of 16 starting goalies with an .817 save percentage. Like, it doesn't make any sense. And I will say that, and trust me, I'm not absolving Connor Hellebuyck, and he said it himself quite clearly today, he can't allow this many goals. The play in front of him was, like, at best, disinterested. It was not good from what we saw from that Winnipeg Jets defense core in the two games in St. Louis. They looked like a different team. Their body language was poor. I don't know how much the Hellebuyck playoff situation is affecting them and how they think about it or go about their game with their mindset, but it was not a good look, and they've got to figure out how to better defend in front of him, because it's a lot of it's on him, but it's not all on him.
Well, there's usually a lot of blame to go around, and fascinating to see what happens in Game 5 in that series. Did the Wild miss their chance when they could have gone up against the Golden Knights 3-1? It kind of feels like they needed things to align perfectly, and now it being 2-2 really plays in the Vegas Golden Knights' favor.
Yeah, kind of similar to how I feel about the Oilers. Mm-hmm. Like I said, I think the Oilers need to just kind of string together two cleaner games out of the next three, and they're moving on. With the Golden Knights, I think they probably feel pretty satisfied to get to an all-square series after four games, knowing that their best players, their top line, Jack Eichel and the whole crew, haven't really done anything yet. You would have to think that they find a way to turn it on at some point over these next couple games, and that they haven't yet and are still at level ground, while the Minnesota Wild, their top stars and Kaprizov and Boldy and that whole crew have all been excellent. You'd have to think that they feel like their chances are pretty good to get back in control of this series. And similarly, as much as the Wild might be feeling some regret, I'd have to think that the Colorado Avalanche are feeling a ton of regret from the way that last week played out. I mean, they had a chance to put a skate to the throat of the Dallas Stars game two last Monday night 1 week ago to win both games on the road and to with a first period and third period lead and nothing happening for the Stars. They opened the door right up in that series for a Stars team without Haskinen and without Robertson to really take advantage, and now they're in a dogfight instead of what could have been a short series. They might not even win this series now.
Frank, we appreciate the time as always. Thanks for this.
Thank you, guys. Have a good week.
There he is, Frank Saravalli on Sports at 650, brought to you by Angry Otter Liquor. Spring into savings at Angry Otter Liquor. Save $4 off White Claw Big Serve Variety 12 Packs. More at angryotterliquor.crs. Some fascinating stuff there from Frank on the Rick Tocchet situation and mentioning that don't rule out Mike Sullivan as a possibility.
Yeah, and, you know, at some point here, and maybe even tomorrow, depending on what happens or doesn't happen, we do have to start talking about other candidates. Mm-hmm. Who would the Canucks go after? And Mike Sullivan is the intriguing one, right? And you look at it as a big time acquisition. If you want to talk about making a splashy move for a head coach, if you're not bringing Rick Tocchet back, it would be Mike Sullivan.
Yeah.
I just see no world where the Canucks are going to make him the highest paid coach in NHL history on a per year basis. I just don't know if that's going to happen. I think the only thing that would maybe make it a consideration is because he's getting paid for two more years, that it gets offset for a couple of years, so you're not paying the full freight for the next two. But eventually that bill is going to come due if you sign a 4 or 5 year deal or whatever it takes. So color me skeptical about it. But is there a world where it becomes enticing because he still has term with the Pens?
I guess it's possible. Is there a different budget for a guy that's got the two Stanley Cups on his mm-hmm. resume, right, versus Rick Tocchet, who doesn't have that on his resume, though he was a part of that coaching staff that Mike Sullivan ultimately is getting credit for. So
yeah, I mean, everything I've heard is if they don't bring Tocchet back, it's unlikely that they're going to go out and spend bigger on another head coach.
Yeah.
But are we entering desperate times? With ticket prices going up too, right?
Yeah.
With trying to keep Quinn Hughes, if Tocchet doesn't come back,
Sidney Crosby probably comes with Mike Sullivan, right?
Yeah.
Well, he didn't come for Tocchet, but he'll come with Sullivan.
Well, exactly. Yeah, right. Gotta go one step further.
Anything's possible, as Kyle Dubas said today.
Yeah.
He only called Sid 5 minutes before it became public.
Yeah, so. I just don't see it. Yeah, exactly. Just call him right away. But I mean, I think, and if you're Rick Tocchet, if you're not coming to Vancouver, and I know I'm not disputing at all what Elliot said about Philly or Vancouver. I take him at his word on it, but that's today. Mm-hmm. Let's say that you don't come to an agreement this week. Are you jumping to Philly, or at this stage, do you just wait to see what happens in LA? We just talked about LA. Like, how do you come back with Hiller if you lose this series? I know they've made some coaching changes. And if Vegas does lose to the Wild, are they going to keep Cassidy or do they make him available? We know how the Golden Knights operate.
Yeah. Anything's possible. And if you have time, you may as well use it if you are Rick Tocchet.
Yeah. So it's, and I think this week it will come to a head is what it seems like. I think the Canucks want some certainty. But if you're Rick Tocchet, if you don't come to Vancouver, if I was him, I'd wait.
Ultimately, like the Philly thing is, I get it. It makes a ton of sense. But I can't get over that Philly is, to me, still years away from being competitive.
Yeah, and listen, that's not to say the Canucks are knocking on the door of a Stanley Cup either.
Yeah, like Philly needs a Greg Cronin right now. Somebody who's just going to like get us through the next 2 years.
Yeah, Greg
Cronin. Yeah. I don't mean to be so
poor, Greg Cronin.
I don't mean to like have you catching strays, but like
Dallas Aikens.
There you go. Like you that go. Kind of a head coach. Like you're getting an NHL paycheck for a couple of years, but you're kind of coaching for the next guy.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of what Philly needs right now. So it's an interesting spot. All right, coming up, we're going to give you the last few minutes of the second period between Tampa and Florida. Florida taking a 1-0 lead on an Anton Lundell goal. And we'll get more into the Stanley Cup playoff chatter as well. That's coming up next on Canucks Central.
The most opinionated Canucks show out there. Canucks Talk with Jamie Dodd and Thomas Drance. Be sure to subscribe on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.